Do you remember the film Indecent Proposal, Jeff Merrick?
Yeah, of course I do. You want to run up my wife for $1 million?
That's what right, Robert Redford.
What I couldn't believe about the movie was it wasn't like they didn't really give it much thought. It's like, no, we can't have this. This can't happen. How about, like, well, hang on a second here. $1 million we're talking about.
Well, $1 million buys center ice for a good number of seasons there, honey. I want to make you an indecent proposal here at the top of the podcast.
Ooh.
And don't worry, it's not about the missus. You have a child. This is completely out of bounds.
Officially, we've spoken on the phone, but I don't think I've ever seen
you. You didn't have a child. Okay. Straight in my tie. But
So
what would it take, Jeff Merrick, lover of all things vegetarian? What would it take for you to consume the 510 calorie monstrosity known as the Burger King Bacon Sundae? A strip of bacon sticking out of the ice cream, bacon crumbles atop a fudge and caramel sundae, released in April in Nashville, released wide this summer.
Wait a minute.
Burger King Bacon Sundae, sir.
The Bacon Sundae. You know, we're really close to the end of civilization. Like, how close are we now to people saying, you know what? Bacon bits. I bet it goes well on your toothbrush with the right toothpaste, though, with the right spearmint infused toothpaste. I bet bacon bits would taste really well. We're really close, aren't we?
I do think that there's a certain nihilism that's crept into our public consciousness, in which case I think that the inherent hedonism of eating a bacon sundae is only appropriate. We are all staring into the abyss here, culturally, Merrick, and I think the bacon sundae is a response to that. But I bring it back to the original question, sir. What would it cost, either monetarily or, I don't know, some sort of possession?
What would
be out there that would be the indecent proposal that you'd accept to shove your face in a delicious bacon sundae?
Only if it were life or death for my children or my family. I guess children are my family.
Okay.
Life or death for anyone in my family.
I think most people would probably do that. Do a lot of things if it meant life or death for your
family.
That
would be it.
Let me bring it down a notch on the scale.
For you, it would be a dare.
For me, it would be like, here's a bacon sundae. What do I got to do?
Right,
nothing. Okay. let's say that you're on a magical island like on Lost.
A magical island.
In which an ice cream sundae could exist despite punishing heat.
Okay.
And let's say said ice cream sundae has a strip of bacon and bacon crumbles and is 510 calories. Let's say you come across this sundae. You've been on the island now for 2 weeks. I forgot. Yeah, you're a vegetarian. None of the vegetation is edible. You're starving.
Oh. Okay.
Would you eat the bacon sundae out of survival instinct?
For survival instincts, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the well-being of your family
and survival.
And absolutely. Survival.
Those
would
are
be the
probably
only ways
the only two. Yeah. Yeah, that would be it.
What if the most beautiful woman in the world that's not your wife? Okay, let me rephrase that. What if the second most beautiful woman in the world? There, I'm keeping you honest.
Yeah, good.
The second most beautiful. All right, third. I got a wife too. Third most beautiful. Fourth, Elena's here. The fourth most beautiful woman in the world comes up to you and hands you the bacon sundae, bacon crumbles, bacon strip, 510 calories, and says,
"Jesus,
if you consume this, Jeffrey, all of your wildest dreams will come true."
No, not a chance.
No,
no, no, wouldn't have. Wouldn't happen. Although, you know what? I was at a wedding. I'll tell you, I've been full-on vegan going on 5 years now. And I was at an Italian-Greek wedding 2 Saturdays ago. And around 11 o'clock, they brought out a pig for everyone to chow down
like
on.
Like on a spit? Like one of those?
Yeah. And I had the I know I'm a vegan for life moment because I walked by it and I was like, oh, man, that smells like awful. And everyone's just like chowing into this like it's you know, they've never eaten before. Everyone's just loving, like everyone's like heaps on their plate. Everyone's just digging it. And Claire, who's been vegan now, I think about 15 years, I'm like, man, that just smelled off. She goes, because it smelled to you for the first time with your sort of nose cleansed. It smells to you what it actually is, rotting flesh. That's actually what you're smelling. I'm like, man, I can honestly tell you, now more so than ever, I've eaten my last piece of meat.
Wow. It was like you're Neo waking up from the Matrix and seeing life for the first time with your own eyes. Impressive.
So, unless it was survival or to protect my family. That would be. Where is this car? Is this somehow going to turn into Zach Parise? Is this turning into Zach Parise turning down the Rangers?
I'll tell you exactly where it is. In the context of our conversation and the fact this is a hockey podcast, the New York Rangers are a bacon sundae. And Zach Parise just looked at it. He contemplated it. He licked his lips for a moment, and then he said, no. I know this isn't something that I should consume. For those who don't know, Captain, my captain, Zach Parise, said today during getaway day for the Devils that he will not, I repeat, will not sign with the New York Rangers despite being an unrestricted free agent this summer. Bucking a tradition, going off the track that was laid down by the Bobby Holik, by Scott Gomez,
yeah,
and by Bruce Driver. He says no. He actually said no way when he was asked if he would sign with the Rangers this summer.
It's curious because the one thing we know about Glenn Sather is he loves reclamation projects. I mean, a lot of GMs do, but Glenn Sather really loves reclamation projects. Oh, no. I can change this hockey player. I'm curious what a very public message like this, how this, if at all, stiffens the spine of Glenn Sather. Oh, really? You don't want to become a Ranger? Let's get stupid with her. Like, if it wasn't a salary cap universe, what a great strategy this would be for Zach Parise, right? Because you know it would challenge Glenn Sather's masculinity. Oh, really? You won't sign with the Rangers? Really? Let me write you a ridiculous check here on Jimmy. Hey, Jimmy Dolan, bend over and write a check on your back.
Zach Parise. You coquettish tease you. Thwarting our advances, only to eventually have me win your hand with all of my money. I think it's a twofold thing from hearing Parise talk today. I think it's a twofold thing. First off, I don't think he wants to go to the Rangers and have all of that stuff have to follow him. You know, I think he's not a dummy. He saw what happened to Gomez. He saw what happened to Drury. He knows if he goes to the Rangers and signs for more money than Brad Richards got, because you know that would have to be the case,
right,
that the pressure will be on him to perform at a level in which he can't. I mean, you know, the expectations money-wise for a guy like Chris Drury, who was a very, very good player, were preposterous. And Parise's never going to be a 110-point scorer, but that's going to be the expectation if you're paying him $9 million a year. So I think he knows that that's a bad deal. And I think that also there's an inherent loyalty to Lou and to the organization to not go across the river. Now, the real question is, will there be an inherent loyalty to Lou and the organization not to go down the turnpike, make a right, and go to Philadelphia? I mean, that's really the other issue here is that we didn't say, I wish somebody in the media would have been like, what about the Flyers? You know, I don't think it happened today.
What about the Minnesota Wild? What about the Detroit Red Wings?
And that's the thing with Parise. Like, he said today in no uncertain terms that he would like to come back and play for the Devils. This is before his agents have had a single word of negotiation with Lamoriello. This is before his agents have received an official formal offer from the Red Wings, the Wild, the Hurricanes, the Flyers, every other team under the sun. There's a lot to be figured out, sussed out, a lot to still happen in this situation. But there's no question that when your jumping off point is, I'm not going to sign with your rival, I'm going to talk about next season within the context of still being here, and I love the organization, the area, and I want to stay. It's a good place to be if you're a Devils fan today after the disappointment of Game 6.
So essentially what he has done is he's narrowed the field to 29 teams. Okay, so feel better about yourself, New Jersey Devils. He's taken one chess piece off the board. All right, gotcha.
What is that? He said in no uncertain terms that he would like to come back to the Devils. Now, again, there's a billion different things.
Of course he said that
here.
Today. What day is it, Wish? What day is it? Today is June the 13th. Of course he's going to say that. I'd like to remain a New Jersey Devil. Come July. The caveat being, at the right price. To me, it's going to come down to three teams. And I think New Jersey's in it. I really do. I think New Jersey's part of the equation. And I think Minnesota is. And I think the Detroit Red Wings are as well. Specifically, again, if they lose a player like Jiří Hudler, I think they're definitely in the mix.
This is from Five for Boarding. I heard Parise just got enough miles in the final to fly to L.A. and sign with the Kings and celebrate the raising of their banner. Now, it's funny you should say that because, again, everybody's in on this. The Kings are in on it. If they let Dustin Pedder go and they trim a little bit more salary, they would have enough money to go out and just have Parise fill that salary slot. There's so many teams out there that are going to be on a Parise. It would be baffling if he didn't at least take it to July 1, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and there are other teams. We're going to get to this in my answer to the question of the day. There are other teams out there that on the West Coast specifically that need that type of energy and specifically the type of speed that Zach Parise can bring to a lineup.
Well, and it's funny, you know, we had a reader in our chat today talk about how Parise's stats were comparable to those of P.A. Parento. But okay, honestly,
let's calm down. All right.
They're both on pretty good lines, but the bottom line is that the intangibles that Parise brings to a team as a leader, as a competitor. I mean, if you watch this kid, there are so many echoes to the level of compete that Sidney Crosby has when you watch Parise play.
Thank you.
Going to the corner. It's reckless abandon. Yeah.
He plays. I'm not saying he's as good as Sidney Crosby because he isn't, but he plays as hard as Sidney Crosby. Completely agree. And it's not one of those situations where, what does Dave Tippett call it? Ambition versus achievement. You can look really ambitious when you move around, do a lot of things, and you look like, you know, remember Chris Chelios used to always talk about the Setters. Of course it looks like they work hard. They can't skate. you can look like you're doing a lot of stuff versus actually achieving something. And Zach Parise does both. He has that ambition married to achievement. And it's a very rare thing.
And it is a rare thing. And, you know, there's no tangible evidence that players are clutch. I think our friends in the stats community have shown that you can't look at a bunch of numbers and say that a guy is quote unquote clutch year in and year out. But you can look at a player and say this is a guy who elevates his game in important situations and in the postseason. And Parise is a guy who elevates his game. He's a guy that you can bring on and know that he will bring, like Briere, a guy that will bring it every single time he gets a crack at the postseason.
Here's the way you look at it. Unlike a sport like basketball, where one player can so overwhelmingly impact the outcome of a game, hockey is still very much a capital T team sport. Basketball is still very much a lowercase t team sport. But with someone like Zach Parise in the lineup, and this is all you can really ask of a hockey player, he gives you a greater chance to succeed. I mean, a lot of it depends on the complementary players, and it still has very much a team game. A lot depends on your goaltending, your coach, your system. A lot of different things come into play, but the one thing you definitely do know about, you mentioned Danny Briere, mentioned Zach Parise, the one thing these types of players do is they give you a legitimately better chance to succeed
every single night. Let me ask you this question then, because I don't know if I can answer it as a Devils fan, so I'll ask you. Parise walks. Let's say he goes to Detroit. Mm-hmm. Devils in the next 4 years don't get out of the first round 3 times, miss the playoffs once. Was it worth not trading him?
Yeah, because you got to the Stanley Cup final.
That's
all you can ask of a team. I don't think you can expect a team to win the Stanley Cup. I think the best thing you can ask of a team is get to the Stanley Cup final. So yes, it was worth it.
It's something that I really haven't thought all that much about because, you know, the whole thing's still kind of sinking in that this whole thing actually happened. But yeah, you know, in thinking about it, I think it was worth it. I mean, to get to the final, to have a crack at it, even if it may have cost your team down the line if he doesn't re-sign, I think it was worth keeping him.
Yeah.
You can't always say that.
And listen, you have to give your fan, at the same time too, give your fan base something to get charged about, to get enthused about. Fill that building. Get some positive energy into that building. You know, get some smiles. Bring in some new fans. Sure, if they're gonna, you know, have a dip and you know, take a downturn on the radar for a couple of years, well, so be it. You know, for that moment or for those moments, you made a lot of New Jersey Devils hockey fans happy. And you got some great stories along the way. Rejuvenated Marty Brodeur. Go through Bryce Salvador pops and Volchenkov pops. And all of a sudden, we have a different way. We look at Ilya Kovalchuk. And the only way you get that is to have a deep Stanley Cup run.
Was
it worth it? Yes, it was.
They got
36 Schmill out of the deal? It's not bad.
It was 28 million, I think, in ticket revenue. And then a few more on that, on merchandise and everything else. And really, I mean, God, I think someone pointed out they made more money in this postseason than they did the entire season a couple of years ago, which is insane, from ticket revenue alone. Wow. Here's the question. Was beating Detroit enough for the Predators to feel okay about not trading Suter at the deadline?
That is one of them. That is not the ultimate prize, but that is another hurdle for that franchise.
Okay.
Detroit has always, that's always been their kryptonite. Detroit has... For the Nashville Predators, you know, going back to day one. I mean, what was the first happiest moment in Nashville Predators history? When they beat the Detroit Red Wings. I think it was at Joe Louis Arena too. Like that was like that first moment where it's like, damn it, we're a franchise. Damn it, we're a hockey team in the NHL. You know why? We just beat the Detroit Red Wings. They have always measured themselves up against the Red Wings. And for a team like Nashville, for any team, you know, there's always rungs on the ladder, don't you think? And for the Nashville Predators, one of the big rungs on the ladder was finally beat Detroit in the playoffs. Was it enough? And is it worth losing sooner though? I'm a lot more on the fence about that question than I am about the Zach Parise question.
There you go.
That's a tough one.
All right. A couple more of these things when we get back, but first let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know, it's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
All right, coming up, a guy by the name of Ian LaPerriere will join us to talk about his retirement from the National Hockey League.
You know, if you go to the dictionary and look up hockey player, there'll be no description. It'll just be a picture of Ian LaPerriere. That's
smiling.
How strongly I feel about this guy. Smiling with no teeth. And probably with that beard. And those sunken eyes that say I've played a lot of hockey in my time and I've stopped a lot of shots on every single part of my body and it was all worth it.
Towards the end of his career, he kind of looked like Darth Vader without the mask. Kind of an egghead. Cracked. Scarred. Jeez. Dark eyes. It's just kind of creepy. But yeah, I mean, he's lived the life, right? So the question of the day today we're asking you for the three most interesting, intriguing, fascinating teams this offseason. Who do you think are going to be the three that move and shake the most? Who are the three that you're most interested in seeing make moves? And I came up with four. But I'm a co-host, so I think I'm allowed to go over the allotted number of teams. The listeners, we have to keep it at three. I mean, honestly, we don't have the time to go to four for all of you people. But I'll go to four because that's my list. If you want, we can even make it three and a tie if that would make you feel better. But I got
four. I just do two.
Oh, to even it out?
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
I'll take the bullet.
Number four on my list is the Carolina Hurricanes, only because you get the sense that they're going to spend some dough. They're going to make
huge,
some moves. They need to add talent to that roster. They need to add depth. They need to address the blue line. The Cabrelle thing last year didn't work. It's going to be really interesting to see who they take a run at.
What do you mean it didn't work? No, like the fact that they unloaded that contract should get Jim Rutherford the GM of the year.
Well,
but then again, I know.
I don't think the end game was when they brought him on to then turn around and trade him necessarily. That's what I'm saying. So I think it'll be fascinating to see exactly what they do. And again, that's a place you can get guys to come and play. It's a really nice community. It's a great organization. Hey. Muller is a player's coach. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they're going to be able to attract talent there this summer.
And what's one of the reasons why Kirk Muller signed there? He said it's a great place to raise our kids. And it is. It's a great family spot. Carolina is an awesome destination for hockey players as long as you don't want to be, you know, as long as you don't want to be front page news on the sports section, because you won't be unless you win the Stanley Cup.
Totally.
But if you want to live in sort of medium obscurity and just play hockey and be awesome and, you know, when you show up at the Stanley Cup, you're a star, and when you show up at the All-Star Game, you're a star, considering as long as it's a hockey market, then fine. But if you just want to have, like, a relatively normal life and then just go into a phone booth a couple nights a week, put on a cape, and turn into a hockey player, it's a great place to play.
Number three on my list are the Washington Capitals, not only because they're one of two teams still without a coach, and I think the coaching decision is going to be really interesting. The fact they've waited this long would almost make you feel like that Adam Oates is going to be the guy or in the mix. You know what I mean?
I know his name's out there. Just considering how close this team is, and I still think, and we all think, I suppose, now they have Braden Holtby locked, this team is so close. Do you do it with a rookie head coach? I don't know.
Well, that's the real issue, man, is that the head coaches they're talking about, the ones that are at least interesting, right? Adam Oates, never been a head coach. Dean Evason, never been a head coach. And John Cooper, who is a head coach, but not in the National Hockey League.
He's only been a thing about, and I like John Cooper too, and what's not to like about him? Green Bay, he wins, Norfolk, he wins, but he's only coached pro players for 2 years. and he's never coached NHL players. I think for him, don't you think like the natural progression is assistant coach and then moves on as a head coach in another organization?
Associate head coach or something.
Yeah, for sure. Something like that.
For sure. Number two on my list are the Toronto Maple Leafs, only because the Sands and the Hourglass have nearly run out.
You already named two, so this is your third.
No, this is number two on my list. I'm going in reverse order, descending order. Yeah, exactly. So number two on my list of four are the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sands and the Hourglass nearly have run out. We all know this is Brian Burke's win or go moment.
Yep.
And they're just, there's not enough talent. There's not enough talent on that roster. They've got to upgrade it in so many different positions. I'm fascinated to see if they do it because Brian Burke's in love with this team in a way he shouldn't be. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Publicly, yes. And that's the way he speaks. But privately, listen, Brian Burke's not an idiot. Right now,
well,
he
but
made
you,
some
hold
bad
on.
Moves. Like, do you not think that Brian Burke like looks at this team the way a lot of people? But he's not going to say that publicly.
No, but I don't know, man. Like sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have an ugly baby you don't know is ugly. Do you know what I'm saying? Like he put this team together. He might not realize how bad this team is without taking a step back.
I don't know, man. Considering how he keeps, you know, every off season and last off season was more, you know, tearing it down and moving things around. I mean, a general manager who really likes his team doesn't do a whole lot with it. You know who's liked his team the last 5 years? Kenny Holland. And you know what he's done? Pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no trades, no moves, maybe a waiver thing here and there, but we call up the GR and back, but that's a general manager that likes his team. But when you see, you know, contracts buried in the minors and you see, you know, moves made all throughout the year and free agent signings and constantly working the phone, like, trust me, the fact that Brian does so much with his team to me betrays the fact that he doesn't love his team and he knows there are significant areas to address.
And one of those areas is between the pipes, and that's really why they're number two on this list, is to see if they actually go down and make the Luongo trade eventually. And if not, what other dominoes fall? Where do they go if it's not Luongo? Yeah. It'd be really interesting to see.
Here's something real interesting about Brian Burke, and we'll couch it in, you know, language that Brian used himself when Dustin Penner was offer sheeted by Kevin Lowe. And Burke said, "It's a desperate move by a general manager who's desperate to save his job." If they make the Roberto Luongo deal, how will you read that? Like, will you not look at it the same way and say, wow, he's bringing this guy in, and be damned if the contract goes to 22.
I think here's a guy
that's just trying to save his job. And Brian, to your point, Wish, Brian knows he has one more year at this.
The way people are going to see it is this. They're going to say, that's a very smart move by a smart general manager who his team was very smart to hire.
No? They're not going to say that? Number one on my list, the most interesting team.
I'm sure the most interesting team
from where I'm sitting is the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
And you know it. That's the Lidstrom leaves. You've got half the roster that's getting up in years, and you got to win at some point. Yeah. That team, because all roads for Suter and Parise seem to lead to Detroit. And if they don't, then what do? They've got to address the fact that they just lost the best defenseman of his generation. Can't turn the keys over to Cronwall and say that's it, can you?
No, but I do think now more so than ever, you're really going to start to see, because I always think of Nick Cronwall as the crusher, and he is. Let's face it, that's his calling card. But there's a lot more to Nick Cronwall. I think this is going to be a real moment for Cronwall.
I think he's a solid D-man. But listen, here's the question: how far are they willing to go? You know, I think a lot of these guys like to tap dance around the cap and tap dance around the old boys network. You know, Holland giving out contracts that may not necessarily be palatable to some of his peers. But would he ever go the extra mile? Would he ever go that extra bit? And not only pursue a guy like Suter, but if he doesn't get him, then make the play for Weber.
By way of offer sheet?
Uh-huh.
I think he knows if he strikes out on Suter, that the likely destination for Shea Weber, if he doesn't re-sign with Nashville, is Detroit anyhow.
So you think you'd have to, but would you wait a year though?
He would just have to. That's the only caveat. He'd wait a year. See, I think Detroit's going to be in that mix of teams, and there'll be plenty of them that are going. They're going to really try to hit two out of the park, both on the blue line. And one of them is the aforementioned Suter, and that's the obvious one. And you know the other wild card in all of this? Justin Schultz.
Except.
Justin Schultz. who is not signing with the Anaheim Ducks. Hey, all you Badger fans, Wisconsin is going to be jumping in free agent styles. Justin Schultz, who looks NHL ready to anyone that's, you know, watched him play and develop. That's like getting a free first round pick, but a free first round pick that's ready to play in the NHL. There's going to be a lot of teams swinging for Justin Schultz. Many say Toronto has an inside track because his D partner was Jake Gardner with the Badgers. But if Jake Gardner is a piece of trade bait for the Maple Leafs to move up, you can kiss that dream goodbye. So I think Detroit goes for both those two players. I think they go for Suter. I think they go for Schultz. And I think they definitely, when you look up, you know, to your point earlier about, you know, needing to win and running out of time and aging guys, I think they need a shot of vitamin Z up front, don't you?
Quite possibly.
Vitamin Z for all our Canadian listeners.
Yeah, you know, here's the problem with you guys in the media. You say, oh, you signed too many Americans. You signed too many NCAA guys. Oh wait, Justin Schultz, go after him. Get him on Toronto.
He's a good player.
He is a good player. I think he ends up in Detroit, by the way.
You think Suter ends up in Detroit?
Yeah.
Or Justin Schultz ends up in Detroit?
Suter.
Suter does, yeah. I think Justin Schultz is the wild card, and there's so many teams around. Anyway, Detroit is the obvious one. I mean, Montreal is a fascinating story, mainly because of their blue line, which is Swiss cheese right now. Colorado is a fascinating one to me, just because there are so many RFAs they have to sign.
What
you go down the list, DeShane, I mean, it's not like small guys, okay? Like DeShane, O'Reilly, Downey, Mueller, McGinn, Eric Johnson, these are all restricted free agents. So,
yep.
It is going to be a busy
and I'll tell you, man,
season.
That's some great management right there. When you go into a season with roughly 9 restricted free agents and most of them are some of your more important players, that is aces management right there. That's a smart bit of forward thinking on behalf of the Colorado Avalanche to have DeShane, O'Reilly, Downey, Porter,
McGinn, who was awesome for them.
Yeah, Eric Johnson, all up for RFA status. That's brilliant. Listen to this, okay? Stastny, David Jones, they just signed. Landeskog, who's on his rookie deal. Hayda, who re-signed.
Yep.
And then you have Jan Hayda, who was a free agent last year. O'Byrne, Hunwick. I mean, I'm sorry. And then Kobesu. And then McLeod. And then the goalies. Yep. So the goaltending's solid. I mean, we can give him that if you want to build Caprice out.
Yeah, I think about 3 more years of Varlamov and 1 more of Shiger.
But how do you possibly put yourself in that situation where you know all of these guys are looking at what the other makes and then saying, I should have a dollar more?
How the hell do you let
O'Reilly and DeShane both go to RFA status in the same summer?
And I'll put it to you. Who gets more money? DeShane or O'Reilly?
Oh, DeShane does.
How much more?
I don't know. What's
the price tag on DeShane? 5?
Stand by 1 second. I'm going to tell you 1 second. My computer has to go to the page I'm looking for. Okay,
is he
it's there.
A 5?
He's a 5.
And so then O'Reilly is a...
If you're Matt DeShane... Okay, listen.
It's a tough one, eh?
Patrick Kane, 6'3".
Yeah.
Where does DeShane come in on that?
I say 5. I say he's a 5 and O'Reilly's a 4.
I think 5's the floor for DeShane. Could he get above 5?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
But to me, settling in at $5 million is, you know, good for the player, good for the team. And then 4 for Ryan O'Reilly.
Hang on one second. Okay. All right. Here's the comparable. Ready?
All right.
Tavares is 5.5. Signed through 2018. So you assume he gets a little bit more on base because he went long term.
DeShane's a 5.
He comes in right underneath.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, again, you're right though. It does depend on term.
It depends on term, and it also depends on other factors too, as far as what the other guys on the team get paid. It's crazy.
You know who else is in the not as difficult a boat as Colorado, but similar? With David Perron, Chris Stewart, and TJ Oshie, the St. Louis Blues. Those are 3. And won't it be curious to see, considering how he was in Chateau Bow Wow a number of games with Ken Hitchcock, what they do with Chris Stewart?
That is interesting.
And the other, but the big ones for me, curious about Nashville, what happens with Suter. I think we're all on the same page. He's probably going, to test market. Shea Weber, one more year, go to arbitration. We get all that. The curious thing is, what do they do with Radulov? Common wisdom would say, well, you have to qualify him, right? You can't just let him walk for nothing. And then the other question becomes, does he accept his qualifier?
The latest on Radulov, we're going to have this on Puck Daddy later. I talked to Dimitri today. He's traveling today, so he couldn't jot it up the himself. But CSKA from the KHL, the Fedorov team, they traded for his rights. And by traded, they mean they bought them. It was about $8 million to purchase Radulov's rights. Now, keep this in mind.
Wow.
That's just for this season. He has one more year left on his KHL contract. So he could go and negotiate a modified deal, negotiate a new deal. But they paid about, from what Dimitri said, roughly $8 million just to have the right for him for this season.
For this season. And if he doesn't sign, his rights go back?
If he doesn't sign, they have his rights for a year, and then that's it.
Oof.
Yeah.
To me, one of the more curious teams to watch in the offseason are the San Jose Sharks. This team, to me, I don't know if we have, because we're standing by for Ian LaPerriere, so I'm not sure if we have enough time to do this right now, but I spoke to someone... intimately associated with the San Jose Sharks not that long ago. I had a good long chat about the future of the San Jose Sharks, specifically now that Brad Stewart is in the mix, and sort of what this means not for their blue line, what they need up front, what they need on the bench. So let me start this, and we'll stand by for Ian LaPerriere. You have to ask yourself, now that you have Brad Stewart in the mix, you know, left-hand shot, whose job does that cost on the blue line? Because they're stacked there, right? With Vlasic and Boyle and Murray and Brent Burns. It probably means that Jason Demers has played his last game as a San Jose Shark. He moves the puck. He's a fast player. Left-hand shot, smart guy. So probably he's one name. And maybe it's a trade, no, not trade deadline, but draft day deal. But look for Jason Demers to probably have played his last game with the San Jose Sharks. What do they do? Here's my question. What do they do with Dan Boyle? Now, we know that Doug Wilson loves the guys that he brought in, guys that he drafted, guys that he traded for. He's 38 years old. He has a limited no trade clause. But again, he's 38 years old. The shot's not what it used to be. And here comes Brent Burns. And he's got two more years at $6.67 million.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a pretty high salary for
that's
a player of his age. Yeah,
pretty high salary, considering you could say there is a little bit of redundancy on the power play with Brent Burns there. So that will be a fascinating story. Also, look for them to add I think they would probably want to add an ex-player to the bench. This is in addition, so no one's losing their job. They would probably like to bring in a fire and brimstone player on the bench to rattle some cages, right? A guy, you know, we saw this with, you see this with coaches all the time. Guys that, that didn't play in the NHL, sometimes have a hard time rattling the cage of NHLers because, and we saw this maybe with Tom Rennie in Edmonton, didn't play the game, so you have a hard time rattling the cages of guys that are playing because what comes back? What are you talking about? You never played the game. So it wouldn't surprise me if the San Jose Sharks went out and found someone on the bench who's played, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 games, a robust guy, and a guy that can really yap and can really bark and has some bite. Wouldn't surprise me if that player, and you look at who they have in the organization, maybe it's Dirk Graham's a scout. Maybe you bring in Mike Ricci.
Well, that was going to say, you mentioned somebody with bite, and Ricci's can gum you. He can't really bite you, but I think that that's the kind of guy you're looking at, right? I mean, he'd be a perfect guy to come in and be that guy. A snarly guy who's been through it, has the respect of his peers. For sure he'd be that guy.
And up front, this team needs to get faster. And because there's only one guy, when you look at it, that can keep up. And I know there's difference between a fast skating team and a fast moving team. And LA was a fast moving team, but not a fast skating team. But in a drag race, only Patrick Marleau can keep up. And I know here come all the Marleau detractors. Oh, he disappears in the playoffs and all that. Got to get rid of him.
Well, Logan Couture is not exactly an anchor on this team either.
But he's not exactly fast.
Listen, if your argument is that they need to get faster up front, then this guy has been on the block more than anybody that I've ever seen without actually getting traded. Can Ryan Clough's time with the San Jose Sharks please come to an end?
He's got 1 year left on his deal.
They love. I bet they.
I know they love the size. Just trade him. Get faster. Get younger.
You know what?
Be UFA'd in 2013. Just cut ties already. Tired of it.
I bet they would. I bet they would. If they got a player back like James Van Riemsdyk, and how good would James Van Riemsdyk look playing with Logan Couture?
And how good would Ryan Clough look in Flyers?
Philadelphia. I know. That one to me kind of seems like a.
The JVR stuff we touched on yesterday a little bit, but we didn't really get into it. Do you how much credence do you put into the Flyers and Nash?
I think the Flyers are in on everything. If you know anything about Ed Snyder, they're in on everything, and they'll try to find a way to make it work. So I think they're in on it. Do I think that they're willing to part with the, and you mentioned it, you nailed it yesterday with Sean Couturier. I don't think they're willing to go that far. But they're in on it. I think I'm almost positive they're in on Nash, for sure. Why wouldn't they want to be in on Nash?
That Nash thing is so fascinating because honestly, the minute the John Davidson stuff happened with Columbus and them talking and maybe him coming in, I've always in the back, you know, the hockey players are so married to comfort, so married to routine. It's so rare that you do get a case where a guy becomes face of the franchise or whatever actually moves on. And in Nash's case, you feel like there's going to be a split. All logic tells you there's going to be a split. But in the back of your mind, you're like, this guy effing loves this city, and he effing loves this team. And what if there's somebody that to convince him otherwise? But again, we both come back to the same point about Nash, which
Housen,
is that why
Housen would
how can he stay there if Housen is still there? Exactly.
He can't. I can't see it happening.
John Davidson's a hell of a salesman, though. John Davidson can get me to buy an exploding car, I'm pretty sure.
He might get you to buy an exploding car, but to coexist with Scott Housen, that'll be a tough one.
That would be a tough one.
Just considering what Scott Housen and the Blue Jackets organization, because it wasn't just Scott Housen, put Rick Nash through last year.
All right,
Rick
sir.
Nash, they really feel wronged. But we'll see.
I believe our guest is there, sir.
He is, and I'll couch the intro the same way that I couched it before, Wish. When you go to the dictionary and look up hockey player, this man's face appears. The recently retired player of over 1,100 games in the National Hockey League and never mailed in a single shift. He is Ian LaPerriere. He joins us now. Ian, thanks for being aboard, and first of all, congratulations on an outstanding career.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Now, when you look back at it, it's funny because when I was talking to Greg about this a couple of weeks ago, whenever I look at Dan Bylsma in Pittsburgh, I always think of you because I think of you two guys killing penalties in Los Angeles. When you look back on your career, Ian, what comes to your mind right away? What are the moments that stand out for Ian LaPerriere?
You know what? Every game I enjoy. You know, like I do have. You know, 2 years ago when we went to the finals, for sure it's kind of stick in my mind for good and bad reason that we lost, but just the ride was something. But I'm really one of those guys, like, I really enjoy my moment as a player, and I felt, you know, privileged to be able to wear an NHL jersey. You know, it was a dream of a little boy from Montreal just to play one game, and I was fortunate to play over 1,000 games, which, you know, I'm very thankful for it.
Many of those games were during 9 seasons with the Los Angeles Kings. What were your thoughts in seeing the Kings finally win the Stanley Cup this year?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I watched the final game with my kids. Well, actually, we watched the last 3 games with my kids, and that's way past their bedtime, but Daddy was kind of nice to do that just for them to see the cup being raised. But it's you know, I was very happy for the Kings, you know, for the organization, for everybody who's been there for so long, and to watching really, really bad hockey and watching really good, well, not really good, yeah, really good hockey, a little bit of both, but mostly bad hockey. And just for them to get the cup, I think it's great for the fans to be able to enjoy a great summer with the Stanley Cup.
Was it a little bit bizarre, maybe surreal, because this, you know, the Los Angeles Kings organization has been called Philadelphia West for quite some time now. What were your feelings on seeing so many ex-Philadelphia Flyers on that team raise the Stanley Cup?
Well, you know what? I think it's great for guys like Simon Gagné, Carson, Richie, and Williams, who had great playoffs. And, I mean, it's hockey, guys. Like, you make trades, and those guys went on, and they fit perfect there, especially, you know, Carter and Richard, like, being, you know, secondary scoring there, I think it's a better fit for them. And obviously, Dean Lombardi said the same thing. And when he made those trades, you know, got Richard from us and got Carter from Columbus, it worked out perfectly. And those guys were a big part of that Stanley Cup. But, you know, you get guys like Jonathan Quick, who's, you know, he was known as a good young goalie, but now he just put himself as a superstar, which was great.
You know, I was thinking about you, Lappy, during the playoffs when shot blocking became a big story. The Rangers blocking all those shots and people saying, ooh, shot blocking, it's so bad for hockey. It makes hockey unwatchable. It stops offense. And here you are. You're a guy who, you know, made his bones blocking shots. Do you think there's anything wrong with blocking shots as a man who's seen probably the best and worst of shot blocking in this league?
You know what? I thought the playoffs were unbelievable this year. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're always going to find people whining about everything. You found people whining about hooking a couple years ago. The game was too slow. Now the same people are whining the game's too fast, and you get concussions left and right. You know, you're always going to find people that, you know, are looking for something to complain about, but I really do think the game was great to watch in the playoffs. And, I mean, like, those guys give their all out there. Blocking shots like they did. The Rangers surprised me, most of the team. They did that all year. It's only in the playoffs. They did that during 82 games. And I really thought they were going to get burned down mentally, and not only because of their coach, but also because of the way they played. And but they did an unbelievable job. They had a great run. And I don't think it really hurts our game to see guys blocking shots.
You know, when we go back to your draft, the 1992 draft, there's only two players in it that have played more games than you did. One is Roman Hamrlich, who's played 1,379 games. Sergei Gonchar comes in at number, he's played 1,132 games. And then you come in at number three with 1,083 regular season games played. There have been quite a lot of achievements along the way. By the way, those two were first round picks. You were a seventh round pick. Seventh round pick, 1,083 games. What are you most proud of when you look back at your career? Because that's got to be one of them.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, the longevity of my career, you know, the way I played, like, you know, I was a physical player who liked to mix it up and physically fighting and all that. And like I said yesterday, I look around and at the end of my career, mostly in my 30s, I was looking around and I didn't see too many guys playing my way, played over 1,000 games. And that's something I'm proud of. And you know what? It's not really the games. I'm proud of the games, don't get me wrong, but I'm proud of what I did all, you know, in the summers. That's what people don't see, that I really took care of myself, and that's the key. That's why I try to tell our young guys in the Flyers organization, you know, it's not only what you do during the season, it's really what you do in the summer, and I always took pride of that.
Hey, how are you feeling these days, by the way? I mean, you had all that post-concussion stuff going on. How's everything going on upstairs?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. You know, like, I still have issues with my eye. I had nerve damage when I took that puck, and I don't really think it's going to go away, but I can deal with that. And other than that, like, I'll have my headaches here and there, but I don't know if it's from my concussion or just being, you know, being older or dehydrated or something like that, but I got a pretty normal life. Thanks for asking.
You know, what's next for you, Ian? Does coaching interest you? Moving into management, scouting? What interests you these days?
You know, being with the Flyers, I'll give them that. And I told them, you know, I tell everybody who wants to hear me that they've been taking care of me since, you know, since I've been here. And last 2 years, instead of sitting on my couch and be depressed, they send me on road trips to mentor our future, you know, our junior kids left and right, and go to Glens Falls and our minor leagues. And that's pretty much what I'm going to do next year, the same thing, just mentoring our young guys and make sure they train properly in the summer. And we have a development camp in July that I run. I ran it last year, and I'm running it again this year. And coaching, if there's something inside me would like to coach, we'll see it on the road where the opportunities are. But for now, I'm going to concentrate on getting to know those young guys, because it's a totally different generation too. And by me doing that, taking care of development of on the fire side, it gives me a chance to get to know those young guys.
Last one for me. I mean, just your thoughts on being able to be a part of this Flyers organization. It feels like you really found a home there. It feels like you've got a real connection with Mr. Snyder and everything else with that organization.
Yeah, you know what? You hear about it when you play against the Flyers, how they take care of their alumni, and it's And, you know, like, I'm witnessing it firsthand, you know, they've been unbelievable. And as a hockey player, we all know, you know, that it's hard when you do retire and you have those worries, what are you going to do? You know, what am I going to do? But those guys really, you know, they embrace me and they're taking care of me, which is great. I can't thank them enough.
And last one here, you know, when you're a young man playing in the Quebec League with Drummondville, did you ever think a day in your life that one day in your NHL career you'd have T-shirts that say it's all about Lappy?
Well, I made one. No, I'm kidding. No, you know what? It's always nice. It's for a great cause, too. And it's Karen in L.A. who started that, and she's been pretty much my number one fan since I played there, and it's all good. I never thought of that, to tell you the truth. You know, I always just wanted to play, but I guess the fans really like my French accent, and I seem to connect really well with fans everywhere I go.
For good reason, an honest hockey player who earned every inch of his ice. I know you're golfing. We'll let you get back to it. Thanks for stopping by today. And Ian, congratulations on a great career.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys. Have a good night.
Take care, man.
Ian Perrier of the Philadelphia. You know, just talking a second ago about the San Jose Sharks and needing a player that's, you know, been there before, can bring some snarl to the bench, that can talk to anybody from Joe Thornton all the way down to Andrew Desjardins, and no one can bark back, oh, yeah, what did you do in the NHL? How about Ian LaPerrière?
Look at you, matchmaker.
Like, I love that guy. Yeah,
look at you. Have you ever thought about coaching, sir? Because cracks knuckles. I may have an opportunity I can broker for you.
I think I have Doug Wilson's number here, my BlackBerry. I can.
That's funny. He is a one of a kind player.
That's,
I mean,
awesome.
Like, to have gone. We've all had our sports injuries. What happened to that cat?
Oh man!
When he blocked that shot.
Happened to me. Not as bad as him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Paul Martin that took the slap shot. It was actually Sean Cullen, the comedian. It was I play in one of the hockey leagues that I play in. It's like a league for, mainly industry people, TV and radio, and a lot of musicians play in it. And, there's one team called the Jokers, and they're all comedians.
Right.
And, so I go down to block a shot. Like, who's blocking shots in men's league? Cullen double pumps on it, and there's my face, and boom, he lets it go. He's like, and the minute he let it go, he saw in his face, like, oh my God, I shouldn't have shot that. And it caught me right in between, underneath, and I was only wearing like one of those quarter visors, and even then I pushed it up my head, like OHL style. So essentially I was wearing nothing. Right in my face, like right underneath my nose, busted my nose, 30 stitches, split my lip wide open. Thankfully, didn't mess up, you know, no dental work. So thank God, busted nose and all that. But you know what it led to, Wish?
What?
It led to me, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, going down the K-hole for the first time. Because I went into the hospital and they stuck a needle in the cut to try to freeze it, and it didn't take. So they put me under using ketamine.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I'd ever tried Special K. I'm like, okay, now I get it. Because I was like kind of in and kind of out. I'm like, okay, man. Now I understand Special K. Wow. Anyway, that was, and like, it looked, my front of the jersey looked like it spilled like a bottle of Merlot on it. And it was gross because all the guys on my benches, the referee's like leading. First thing, I pop right back up, but you're stunned, right? And I try to go to the corner to get the puck, and the ref grabs. He's like, son, you got to get off the ice. And I'm like, wow, what's the big deal? I look down at my jersey, and I look like, you know, the Manson murder victim from 1969. And, but it was, the guys on the bench said it was gross because you could tell when my heart was pumping, because every time it pumped, it squirted out of my face. Like, it was one of those kind of cuts. Oh, it was bad, dude. So, but that's not anywhere close to what he went through. There's a big difference between a Sean Cullen slap shot, ladies and gentlemen, and a Paul Martin slap shot.
LaPerrière hit with a slap shot in his mouth in 2009, between 50 and 100 stitches, and returned to play in the third period.
He
lost 7 teeth from the incident. Five real and 2 fake. And then had the orbital bone injury, in 2010. Just, God, what a, like you said it, man. Like, listen, we don't like throwing around the word warrior for these guys, because sometimes it can be taken the wrong way, but it's pretty applicable for this cat, the way he played.
That's admirable, man. That is honest. And remember what he said? I mean, right after that, he said, I know I don't encourage people to do this. I know it's stupid. I maybe shouldn't have come back, but my whole life I dreamed about the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Like, and then we talked about this yesterday with the Rob Scuderi, you know, turning his back on Bernie yesterday. If you ask any hockey player, Will you deliberately put yourself in significant harm's way in order to win the Stanley Cup? Every one of those guys, by the time you get to the NHL, every single guy will say yes.
Yeah.
Every single guy.
For sure. Question of the day, give us the three most fascinating teams this offseason, the ones that you are really interested in seeing what they do. Rascal Gas, Oilers would be one. Number one pick, new coach, UFA D-man, question mark?
Hmm. Well, they'll make a big offer for Suter, I'm sure. I don't know that Suter ends up there. I think they may have to secure it. They want a right-hand shot D-man, right? That's what they want. They essentially have two guys that can move the puck, and that's Whitney and Petrie. After that, it gets a little bit challenging. So they want a right-hand shot that can move the puck.
Kevin Power writes in, Columbus's rebuild, Toronto's odyssey for a goalie, and the Rangers hunt for another goal scorer. Be the three fascinating ones. Tyler Eves, Carolina Hurricanes, Homer pick, plus lots of free agent money, St. Louis Blues, and Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, St. Louis for the players they have to sign. Did they lose Barrett Jackman, by the way? Can you see Jackman coming back, or does he go elsewhere? I've always loved Barrett Jackman. I know he's got a lot of detractors in St. Louis, but man, I've always loved Barrett Jackman.
It might depend on what's thrown at him, you know? I feel the same way about Salvador. Like, I think Salvador on the Devils is the guy they'd like to bring back, but I mean, if somebody wants to throw a really high average salary two-year deal or something like, or three-year deal at him,
the one we keep coming back to, even though the different players, is look at how Jay McKee rang the bell with the Sabres.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? Just as an aside here, Wish, can you think off the top of your head someone who's made more hockey players richer than Lindy Ruff? Like, you look at the way that Lindy Ruff, like, with that Buffalo Sabres team, what did he translate it into for Jay McKee for his contract? Ditto for Daniel Briere, ditto for Chris Drury, and ditto for Brian Campbell. That guy made a lot of hockey players capital R rich, didn't he?
Yep. Drove Vanek away to sign that offer sheet. That too.
Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah. This is from Casey Ippolito. I hope that's right. Top three teams most interesting this offseason. Pittsburgh, the D needs to be shuffled around. Letang and Orpik stall once out, and Crosby needs to be re-signed. That's a lot on Chiro's plate. Toronto, let's see. They need a number one center, a number one goalie, and help at every other position. Their two best forwards don't suit the style of the coach, and the GM is essentially fired if the playoffs are once again missed. With all eyes on Toronto for the Winter Classic in 24/7, Burke will overpay to bring in star players.
Ooh, maybe, because as been documented on this podcast and elsewhere, this year is the fight for his job. And hey, here's a funny one. Not related to our topic.
Oh, by the way, the third one for Casey, San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose is fascinating because their blue line is set. They got to get rid of someone. I assume it's going to be Jason Demers, and they have to do something with their speed up front. Mark Erickson, as to your point about John Davidson being able to, John Davidson could sell you an exploding car. This is funny. This took on a life of its own, too. Mark Erickson, John Davidson could sell baby bear shampoo to Jeff Merrick.
Oh, no. Terrible.
That's funny, though.
Amit Joshi, Colorado Avalanche is the team to watch. Lowest payroll in the NHL. 10 players signed for next year. Biggest need being a legit top three winger. Outside shot at Zach Parise. His speed would slide in really nice with the young Avs. Of course it would, but why would Parise go and play for Colorado when there are teams that are a lot closer to a Stanley Cup he can play for, is the question.
Here's the thing. I don't know that Colorado's that far away.
Really?
Yeah. I think they're a couple of pieces away. I think
get to the second round of the playoffs before we start?
No, I understand. Oh, okay. Well, when was the last time LA made the second round of the playoffs?
Probably not
recently. The Stanley Cup. They won the Stanley Cup. Like, I don't know, man. Drew Doughty,
though.
I understand. Listen, that's what I'm saying. They ain't there yet, broski. I know. And letting go on Kevin Shattenkirk. Oh my God. But I don't think that they're, that far away.
Tom Ginsburg writes in, Detroit, how will they replace Lidstrom? Edmonton, they need to add defense when, you can have the most potent offense in the league, but you won't win anything if you can't stop the other team from scoring. Dallas. They have been knocking on the door of the playoffs the last two seasons despite having one of the lowest payrolls in the league. It will be interesting to see what moves they make with a new owner who's willing to spend. Now, the new owner has said that he's willing to spend. The new owner has said that he's willing to spend on high-end free agents. It's just a matter of whether or not
there's one that they can attract to Dallas this summer.
That's just it. I don't know if the players – that's a great point. I don't think the players are there this year. Curious what Jamie Benn gets as an RFA.
Oh, so I would imagine it would be – what does Louis Erickson make is the question.
You want me to check?
I'm going to check right now. Do-do-do-do-do. Looking up Louis salary. Oh, there it is. It's $4.25 million through 2016. Mm. He'll get that. Mm. He'll get four. He won't make more than Erickson.
You don't think he'll make five? You don't think he'll
see? You know what, dude? If you look at the way the Stars stack up now that I'm looking at their roster here, this next season might be Mulligan season. They got Ribeiro coming off the cap in 2014, Morrow off the cap 2014, Ryder off the cap 2014.
Oh, but his 30 goals are crucial though, dude. That's one of the quietest, most successful UFA signings last year.
Oh, for sure. But I'm just saying that's what's happening.
Guys that are coming off. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that might be the year you make the push. You come back out this year, a little augmentation, hope you make the playoffs, hope you fill some seats, get a little playoff revenue, and then you make the big changes in 2013.
Yeah, it could be.
They should trade Brendan Morrow, though, when they get the chance, shouldn't they?
I think they would, but I mean, I think everyone's considering how dinged
everybody
up the
knows
guy
he's
is
put together and, with and, scotch tape
yeah.
and twigs.
Yeah, but I mean, and that for $4.1 million.
Yeah.
Although you're right though. As a tradable commodity at next year's deadline, when you only have to pick up part of the salary and he just turns into a rental, if Dallas is out of it, I fully expect him to be traded. Totally.
One more topic today that's a bit of a puzzler, and it bookends to the Devils that we talked about at the top of the show. Let's say you're mandated by the National Hockey League to give up a first-round pick in the next 3 years, either this year or the following year or the following year after that. Now, let's say this team, let's say they came within 2 wins of winning the Stanley Cup, but they didn't. They unfortunately lost. But because of that loss, what happens is they are slotted with the 29th pick in the first round. It's almost a second round pick, for goodness sake. So, if you were that team, you would say, obviously, you're going to hand that pick over to the National Hockey League. I'm sorry we tried to circumvent the cap with the Kovalchuk contract, and we all move on. We're all friends now. Here's your pick. Do with it as you please. You'd probably do that, wouldn't you?
One would assume, unless you have perhaps a more nefarious plan up your sleeve.
Well, for whatever that plan is, we'll be all dying to see, because it was reported last night by Tom Galiti of the Bergen Record, and it has been reaffirmed by the man himself today, Lou Lamoriello, confirming the Devils will be keeping their first-round pick. They will not forfeit the pick. He told Dan Rosen of NHL.com, the decision to keep the first-round pick was made a while ago. They will forfeit their first-rounder in either 2013 or 2014. So this is not – they decided a while ago they were going to keep this pick.
Yes.
Is what they're saying. I mean, come on.
This is – yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know, unless they have a trade partner that wants a first-round pick. Maybe they look at someone like Malcolm Subban, the netminder with Belleville, and say he'll probably be around towards the end of the first round. I don't know.
It's the only thing you can think of is that they've got something cooking with...
Or Lou is only going to be there for 2 more years.
Right.
And then he's going to sandbag the GM that comes in the final year.
That's one of the tinfoil hat theories. The other two are that they want to use... This is a great one. I've seen this a couple times today. They want to use the 29th overall pick and give up a higher pick because they know the player they draft the 29th overall will make less money than the player they draft higher.
Not a chance.
That speaks to the classic Lou is cheap meme. The other
Did you
theory...
see what Lou signed Kovalchuk to? Can we stop with the Lou is cheap stuff?
The other theory, and this was one that Tyler Dello put out this morning, is that the Devils are hoping against hope that the next CBA somehow grants them amnesty on this penalty.
I don't know that considering how sacred the salary cap is and how much they want to marshal this salary cap and patrol this salary cap. I don't think there's any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I'm not buying it either.
There's just no chance. I do wonder if, okay, so Luke, let's say Luke, oh, he is. He's keeping the pick this year. Luke keeps the pick the next year. You know, if by then, let's just say Parise's not on the team, they can't come up with something for David Clarkson, maybe he's gone, and Marty Brodeur retires in that final year, you know, the New Jersey Devils are an awful team. Heaven forbid they become a lottery team, and Maple Leafs fans will love to hear this. Does this almost become the reverse Curvers? Does this almost become Tom Curvers in reverse?
You shut your whore mouth. Reverse Curvers. I've got your Reverse Curvers right here. Ugh, that didn't sound very good at all.
That sounds a little dirty.
It's a little dirty.
Some in a brandy sniffer. How about a Reverse Curvers tonight?
We as Devils fans have all learned to take a step back, drink the Kool-Aid, and trust in Lou. We trust in Lou. We believe that Lou knows what he's doing, that this pick is being kept. You could kind of see how it'll play out. Devils keep the 29th pick. They use it on some player that's not even on the draft board that they found playing in some small town in Lithuania. And then he becomes an all-star in 2 years. Pretty much how it's going to work, right?
I think this entire draft is going to be like this. I think this year it's Yakupov first, and then place your bets, because we've seen everyone from, I saw Galchenyuk at number two in some final analysis. We've seen Ryan Murray at number two. We've seen Matthew Dumba, the defenseman from Red Deer, in at number two. We've seen Grigorenko in it. Normally, every year, people's draft lists are pretty similar till about five or six, and then they get a little bit funky, and by the end of the first round, you go berserk. This year, it's Neil Yakupov, and then who knows? I think this is going to be the year of, what? You took Tara Vanen where? You took Jacob Trouba, what? Like, he's still available there? I think this is going to be one of those drafts completely. It's not the strongest draft for 18-year-olds. It may not... Which doesn't mean that eventually it won't turn out to be one of the best drafts, but as far as an 18-year-old crop, this isn't the best one that we've seen. Now, next year, folks, for those of you that have teams that are about to tank, whether it's, you know, planned or otherwise, there are large rewards for you, starting with Nathan MacKinnon in Halifax next season, should you bottom out and end up with a lottery pick. It's a great draft next season. This year, it's okay, but we'll see how it plays out.
All right, that's the show for today. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet, and wish I did something that was very grown up today and very silly at the same time.
A grown up and silly. Let me see here. You placed yourself in a dunk tank.
No, but I have done that before.
I've not.
Today, have you done that before, dunk tank?
No, I have not done dunk tank.
It's fun. I did it at...
Right, hold on. Before you tell us the maturity thing... Yeah. Where did you do the dunk tank?
At the ACC. It was part of a Maple Leafs launch. When I was working over at AM640 doing the Leafs launch program.
Were you the only one in the tank, or was there other on-air talent?
Oh, there were other on-air talent doing it, but it's like on a rotation.
Let me just cut to the chase. Did somebody dunk Howard Berger?
Howard was at the fan then.
Oh, right.
I was at 640. Because 640 had the Leaf rights. Now they're split. Sorry, next year, between TSN and Sportsnet.
Okay, now what is the mature thing that you did?
I did a very mature thing today, Greg Wyshynski. As a father of two, today I booked an appointment to have a vasectomy. It's a very mature thing, right? I know.
Was there a silly component to this too?
Yeah.
Because it involves the penis?
No, it involves my schedule. The only time I could get it is 3 days before I have to do boxing at the Olympics.
Boy, it gives a whole new meaning to cut man, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'm talking to the nurse like, will I be like, the vasectomy's on a Wednesday. He's like, will I be okay for the Saturday? She's like, probably. Like, okay, good enough to go on. Welcome to my life. Even when I'm trying to be really mature, I do something stupid. Welcome to my life, Wish.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, man.
How's
nothing
that?
Like nothing like getting your junk TKO'd a couple days before covering boxing. Yeah.
Cut me, Mick.
I don't even know what to say, man.
If there's anyone out there, and I'm sure there are, gentlemen who have... had the slash before, had the snipperoo, and if you can share any advice or wisdom.
This entire conversation has made me feel as drained as your testes will be 3 days before covering boxing.
I know, man.
In the Olympics.
It's going to be some raisin-looking hacky sack. Telling you right there. Yep.
Exactly. All right.
Have I actually silenced you? You really?
I really don't know what to say.
You have nothing to say?
Well, my penis is now inside of my stomach cavity is the problem. It's crawled up there. It's trying to escape this conversation.
Greg Wyszynski's testicles have unionized and are now calling a strike.
I looked down and I said to myself, am I part of the Polar Bear Club or is Merrick talking about a vasectomy?
See, this is why you stick around to the end of the podcast. Thanks for staying right to the end. Everyone, oh, I can't wait to see what Le Perrier says. Yeah, here's what you do at the end. Here's what you get at the center of the Tootsie Pop. This is what you get from this program.
5 minutes ago, someone's like, oh, I hope they go back and address that right-handed shot defenseman thing for the Oilers. 5 minutes later, they're just staring at their mobile device, mouth agape.
As their boss walks by. No, it's a hockey podcast, I swear.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, I guess I'll just have to settle for being the official impregnator of the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast next season.
It's over to you, Sperminator. Take over.
No pressure.
Come on, Slinger. Get that thing out. Go on, Slinger.
There you go. And featuring Master Baster, Greg Wyszynski. All right. Get the hell out of here. No good can come from this.
Yeah,
all right, we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Have a good day.
Bye.
No, not tomorrow. Friday.
Oh,
Friday.
Shit.
Sorry.
By the way,
come on, Wish.
Merrick and I are both tied up with stuff tomorrow, so no podcast tomorrow. Podcast Friday, game show Friday, and then Friday we'll tell you what the schedule is for the rest of the summer, because there's like complications and stuff. But we'll be there for you. We ain't going anywhere. But we'll be back Friday. No show tomorrow. Merrick gets his junk snip next month, and then game show Friday are those the three scheduling bits that you need to know right now?
Thank you.
All right, bye everybody.
I feel very mature today.